Hi, I'm Katie Kempner, and welcome to Perspectives, which is a series of inspiring conversations with remarkable working women. And I am so excited for today's episode because I am talking with Suzanne Powers, who, besides being an industry powerhouse, no pun intended, was one of my very first guests during the first time I did Perspectives, which was a video series of four interviews. And Suzanne was one of them. And it is such a pleasure to get to talk with her again. Suzanne, welcome.
Thank you for having me a second time without the stage light. This is exciting.
Well, it's easier. You don't have to put on lipstick for this.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciate that.
So let's just start for those listening that may not know and just give us a little background on your career up until now.
Yeah, you're too kind. I certainly don't expect people to be studying the worlds of advertising and communications, but career background. So I will go from today backwards. Most recently, I was at McCann World Group for a beautiful 10 plus years. And, you know, I joined as the chief strategy officer globally and then held a few different roles there, including president, chief product officer, which was a first in our industry. And that was fascinating learning for me and for the organization. I also got the opportunity to chair Future Brand, which is a beautiful brand company within the McCann World Group family. Prior to McCann World Group, I was with the fabulous CPB, where I met you, of course, and met some of my most lasting partners and friends in the world of creativity. It was a brief 3 years, but a very intense 3 years. I almost think of that as an in-depth learning sabbatical for me because it was just such a particular time in CPB's history. And before CPB, I was at TBWA, formerly Chiat Day LA, and went through that transition from Chiat Day LA to TBWA to becoming a global company and worked across all the global brands, which was also a phenomenal. I've had some wonderful gigs. And if I keep going, you'll get into weird things like preschool teacher and PR person for comedy clients. Yes, Carrot Top was a client of mine and all sorts of crazy things. Yeah. So there's quite a bit back there, and then we'll really know how old I am. Yes.
Well, we're the same age, so then we really know how old all of us are. And I have said it before, but we're not going to go into the whole age discussion because that will take up the whole podcast. There's one thing I want to talk about in your career of many interesting things, because you are a person that I know for is so good when you're in a challenging situation and figuring out how to propel organizations and people forward. So you mentioned you were the global president of McCann during the pandemic. I'm just curious, how did you handle that? And then also, were there lessons there that are useful to you today?
Yeah, I think leading through the pandemic is a completely unique experience, but shared by all leaders, no matter what level in any organization they were in. And really, you know, there are so many lessons from it. You know, and I just will start by saying nobody, I don't think there is a guidebook or there wasn't a guidebook at that time. I know there's been some books written since, but there's no manual that says, hey, the world is coming to a stop and everybody's in fear of the most important things in the world, which is their lives and their loved ones. And their health and well-being. And, you know, you don't sort of know what to do as a leader. But what I did and what I learned is that going with my gut and my instincts as a human being was probably the most important thing. I definitely, you know, have been told through that time, gee, you're leading with such humanity. Gee, you're leading from the front. You're the example. But my practical efforts were just around hugging in the company. And McCann World Group at the time was, you know, 15, 16,000 people. So that's a big company to hug in. We had technology on our side. For the first time, we actually used things like Teams. We all had Microsoft Teams before the world shut down, but we didn't really know how to use it. So some practical things that I did as a leader was just constant interaction. Obviously, as people wanted to interact and really taking my cues from them. So whether it was my leadership team And, you know, being sure to understand our, you know, should we spend time together once a week? Should we spend time together one-on-one? Just really taking cues from what was going on in their lives was very important. And then across the broader organization, I hosted numerous town halls, webinars, lunch and learns, coffee chat, office hours, just as much interactivity as, again, our people really needed. Some of that was problem solving. In fact, we created a whole effort called the Solution Room, where people could literally post up challenges they were having, whether they were client challenges, whether they were life challenges. And then we aggregated those challenges into buckets. And we went back out to the community. And again, anybody could be in this community, because the magic of technology means that you can create a space where anybody is actually participating. And we would go back out to the community and say, okay, it seems like these three challenges really need some brain time. Does anybody want to volunteer to take that on? And we would create teams from those challenges, and they would create actual content that we shared across the entire network. So I guess a lot of my leadership lessons were to just really, again, take the cues from the people in the company, but also create some mental stimulation, create some problem-solving capabilities when you aggregate 15,000 people, or sometimes it was 100, sometimes it was 20, to really just share the experience together and build together. And, you know, I mean, there's so many other things, but my lessons are probably leadership, you know, is human and first and foremost. And, you know, even if you are going through a thing like a screen, you can still be immensely human, and you can still pick up the cues, and you can still watch for all the nuance that human beings bring into the workplace. And I would start every meeting by saying, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. You know, no matter where you are, we're together. And I would go from that into literally a check-in and just, you know, get a sense of how people were. And then you can tailor your time with people that way accordingly. So it didn't mean that we were not working on our clients' business. They were a part of this. And that's the other important piece too. We had a much more, I'd say we were a little bit more equal footing when mm-hmm. you're going through something that's such a shared experience together.
Yeah.
You know?
I also found it so interesting because all of a sudden, I mean, this is a side thing, but really it's about the human. All of a sudden people were on video from their kitchens or yes. their bedrooms or their living rooms or their home office. And you were seeing a piece of them very specifically yes. that made them them. Yes. So just asking you this one thing before we move on. So in terms of hybrid workplaces then,
yes.
I mean, that changed everything, right? Because some people wanted to go back to the office, some people didn't. Some companies now are not giving people choices. A lot of them are doing this hybrid thing. What do you think about the efficiency and of hybrid working?
Yeah, even pre-pandemic, and you'll recall we played with this quite a bit in CPP, I've always believed in a global approach. And that means that you're not always physically together. If you're working across 5 geographies, 20 geographies, 60 geographies, you do need technology to actually bind you into a shared experience and into project flow and work. And in fact, you can use your time zones to your benefit, which is a beautiful thing. That said, what I do believe, even pre-pandemic, post-pandemic, real creativity and leaps do require people to be together. So it really, for me, is about finding the cadence of work and finding the flow of work. What are the moments that are pivotal for a team to be together so that they are more fluidly bouncing off each other? They are actually able to feel the energy, which you can really feel in a room when you're physically together. And they make decisions together that are pretty seismic at times. And then what are the moments where individual work is more important and more critical? And that's where hybrid really comes in. So really using it in an advantageous way is something that I continue to play with and strive with. I'm not sure there's a simple answer of a 3-day or a 5-day or a 2-day or 4 hours. I think it's about the flow of work. And I think it's about the flow of team and really being in touch with your team and the mix of energies and capabilities that you have and the needs that you have.
That makes a lot of sense. So you recently started your own thing, Powers Creativity. This is a huge change from working at all these very you know, sizable organizations that you worked for, I have to start by just asking you, what inspired you to do this?
So it's been a little bee in my bonnet or bug in my, whatever you want to call it, but it's been this little idea bubbling along, even in my days at TBWA. So I've always had this little business idea, and I've been super lucky that in all my companies, there has been the ability to experiment and play with it. And whether that's, you know, creating an innovation practice or, you know, doing the chief product officer job was also a way. I'm sure McCann World Group didn't realize they were helping me play with my model. But there's always been this desire within me as a strategy person from a craft standpoint, but strategy person who is me, I'm talking about, that is pervasively strategic. And the business offering that I've created with Powers Creativity is applying strategy to creativity and actually planning for the conditions for creativity to thrive in organizations. That is an idea and a practice that I've always naturally done. And it's always been a side hustle in the back of my mind that didn't become real. So why now? You know what? I just started to really feel like there is a beautiful team in place at McCann World Group. They're ready for the next chapter. And I was really getting itchy and still hungry to do my thing. So I thought, why not now? Why not when we're in a moment of change? You know, I also felt very proud of the chapter I was a part of at McCann World Group. And I wasn't sure about the next chapter. I think that's time for someone else and time for a different team. So I brought the back of the mind thought to the front of the mind and said, is this real? And how would I modernize that for today, given that there's been so many advances in the business of creativity and such a broadening of the businesses of creativity? We're talking entertainment. We're talking blends between music, fashion, film, the world of art. There are so many businesses of creativity that excite me, and I wanted to go a bit broader. So that was a lot of the impetus for me to do it now.
So there are a lot of women that feel this way. A lot of people, but we're only talking about women here. We could talk about everyone. Well, there are a lot of people that get to a certain stage and they think the same thing to themselves. I have another chapter in me. I have something that I want to do. Understanding that not everyone has the luxury to do that. But if you do, if you feel that there is a way that you can do that, what would you say to women that are considering doing that? What advice would you give them?
Yeah. So it's interesting because once I declared I was doing this, I have had a lot of people reach out and say, hey, you know, I've been thinking about that. What do you think? So your question is very relevant.
Well, thank you, Suzanne. I try to ask relevant questions.
Of course. Very good. Very good and very timely. What I tell them and what I'll tell everybody who's listening to this is, and these are my own lessons so far. For me, it is very hard for me to promote myself as a person. But what I love to do is put forward a company and a distinctive offering and really craft that proposition for that offering. It's all the things that we love to do in strategy. What's the vision? What are the values? What's the go-to-market? What's the activation planning? So I've embraced this as a company very intentionally. That Powers Creativity is a company. It's not Suzanne doing something. And that helps me not feel either nervous or unconfident or, you know, reticent to promote myself, because I'm promoting a company and a proposition and offering in that company that I believe in and that I love to do. So in a way, I'm kind of an employee of myself, if that makes any sense. And I'm in charge of putting that company out into the world. And that's quite exciting. And it removes quite a bit, again, of the things that make me feel a little uncomfortable as a person in this business. Just never been good at that sort of self-promotion thing. But for a company, I will go and I will keep going and I will keep pushing. For a pitch, I will go and keep pushing. And that's how I think about building this thing. That said, it's quite a selfish endeavor. I've created something that is built around what I love to do and what I've loved to do in the business. And taking that premise and trying to broaden it. So I would recommend to anybody starting something, make sure that you create a thing that you absolutely love to do, that gives you joy, And also that, of course, is a business proposition that makes sense in the marketplace. And when you find that marriage, you've got something quite special.
You mentioned one thing that I just want to touch upon, which is you feel uncomfortable promoting yourself. And, you know, I was saying women, men, business, but like, I think that that's more of a woman thing, that in many cases, not in all cases, but in many cases, women feel less comfortable promoting themselves, asking for more money that they believe they deserve, really understanding their worth. Why do you think that is?
I think that's so true. And I, you know, is it wiring? Is it the maternal instinct that we tend to have sometimes, which is to care for others first. Even though they tell us to put the mask down on the plane first, we still don't hear that. Of course, we would put our kids on first. So I do think there's a bit of, and I certainly have spent my career helping care for organizations and care for incredibly talented people and make sure I get the best out of those people. And then I create the conditions where they can thrive. That I never really thought of that for me. I was always thinking of it for others. So I think some of it is around that. I think there's a battle of, you know, even when somebody says the word ego to me, I bristle and go, well, I don't have an ego. But the truth is all human beings have egos. It's just, are you leading with it? Or is it something that is giving you conviction? Ego is about sense of self and knowing yourself, right? So, but leading with ego can be about, I am feeding my ego, right? And I'm not sure so many women have that ego that they need to feed. But that could just be my perspective, you know?
No, but it's interesting. And I feel like if I can articulate it correctly, it's a great segue into the next thing I want to talk about, which is your role with the talent business, especially because this is about people who are looking for new jobs. So can you tell us a little bit about the talent business and what your role is with them now?
Yeah, I'm so excited to do this with them. So part of the proposition of Powers Creativity and the company I'm building is that in order to intentionally design the space for creativity to thrive, one of the biggest factors is obviously people and really understanding talent and really understanding how to find talent, how to set them up for success, how to mix them in interesting ways. And that's part of the proposition of what I'm building. So when Gary and I were talking about just the state of talent, he's a friend, he's somebody I've known over the years, and we were having some good debates, you know, with AI coming at us so loudly and prominently and sort of, you know, seemingly providing a threat to some of the ways that actual human beings and talents in the business do what they do. We were having a big debate about the future of talent and some good provocative discussions. And at some point he just said, and I said, you know, part of Powers Creativity is going to be around this talent equation. And, I was saying to him, you know, love to hear your perspective on that. And he said, well, I like that you're pushing me because I have a company called the Talent Business. So he asked me to come in and do this non-exec chair role. The best way to describe it is I'm helping him and his wonderful team modernize their approach to talent and modernize their business. You can think of me as a bit of a provocateur for them. I'm bringing outside stimuli in. I'm running his board meetings, which are active sessions where we are evolving the business and where we are thinking about how the future of talent, whether that's acquisition, development, or even again, just setting them up for success is going to evolve. And I'm so excited about it because it's a beautifully complementary role to the piece that I'm trying to build out on the talent side of my business, where, you know, ideally I'll be hopefully helping as I help clients design the space for creativity. They're going to need some talent help. They're going to need some coaches. They're going to need some org design people. And there's a whole piece to the business that I want to build out. So partnering with him is perfect for that.
So understanding for people that want to have a next chapter, not necessarily with their own company, but perhaps with a new role. And also adding in what we were just talking about women not necessarily putting themselves forward in the same way, having less of an ego to push their own brand. Do you have any advice now working with the talent business for people who are looking for a new job?
Well, I'm certainly not doing what those beautiful people in the talent business do, which is hunting for and helping amazing talent. But what I can advise is, and this I hope comes across the right way, because it's also a hope and a dream that I have, that kind of think of it as like ambidextrous, multi-hyphenated, there's multidimensional, there's pretty big words that I think are really important for talent as we move forward. And it's people who, again, have joined what they do, but they can do lots of different things. And I think that's really critical to people looking for a thing. We've spent too long, and this is not meant to disparage the industry in any way, shape, or form, but we say, oh, so-and-so left, we need to replace their position with the same kind of thing. And I find that there's an enlightened approach now to people being able to, and to companies needing people who can do lots of things. I'm certainly looking for that as I build my business. And so I would say to anyone looking for a gig, it's, you know, look at all the different parts of yourself, look at all the different skills you have, but the loves you have, the things that give you energy, the things that actually excite you, and reposition yourself in that way, you know, so that you land in a spot that embraces that. And I think it's very important for the company, but also for the individual, obviously.
I love that. But it also reminds me of, during that first time you were on my show, you said a phrase which I had never heard before, and yet I think of it often to this day, which is, don't boil the ocean. I had never heard that, and yet it's so perfect. Could you explain that? And could you also say if this is something you still live by?
Oh, I'm so happy you brought this up, because I will say, when you start your own business, there is a tendency to try to boil the ocean. And what that phrase means is doing everything, right? And if you do everything, it means that nothing is being done as excellently or as beautifully as you think it's being done. I have suffered from that clinical condition of trying to boil the ocean in many a job. So I'm kind of laughing that I said that to you, because I am really, really bad at following my own advice, apparently. Whether it's in, you know, dire times, you tend to do anything that's required for the organization, or whether it's starting a business where you start to think you should boil the ocean. It is still true. I catch myself a lot, especially these days, because I get really excited about the different offerings that can live in Power's creativity. And I say to myself, well, I'm taking a portfolio approach, and I'll develop this and that and the other. And I do a brand architecture on myself and say, okay, well, these are the pillars and these are the things that I'm going to deliver. Here's a rule of thumb, I would say. Three, you can probably do. If you start getting to five, you're probably starting to get to that moment where you're about to boil the ocean. And so it's a human thing, right? Like if you can probably juggle three things, you can't really do more than that. So I'm quantifying it now a little bit.
Well, then, and in addition to that, if we could just close by your advice now. Now, here we are, 2024. Do you have any advice you could share with us that has helped you through your life and career?
Yes. And it doesn't mean I've always followed it. So I'm caveating it with a big asterisk. But when I do, it works. And that is to absolutely, positively, really be in tune with your gut. And as you go through your career, your gut gets more informed and it gets more developed. And it becomes just a beautiful, again, like sort of just expert gut. And so things happen, like instincts come quickly. And if you are too busy working on the wrong things, worried about the wrong things, that can get covered. So my advice is to really stay in touch with that and really stay in touch with your instinctive responses to things. You know, I'll give you a practical example. An opportunity comes your way to do a project. An opportunity comes your way to partner with someone. Your gut gets excited and you get a tingle. Go for it. Your gut has a pause and maybe you don't feel well for a second. That means no. And I think we could all save a little or a lot of time and energy at really listening very, very, very closely to what it's telling you, and trust that it's, again, it's informed. The more you work, the more it's informed. So it really won't do you wrong if you're hearing it, if you're actively hearing it.
Well, it hasn't done you wrong. And as always, it is such a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.